Canto 1, Chapter 7, Text Number 9. Shonaka uvacha. Savai nivritti nirata. Sarvatro pekshako munihi. Kasya va bihatim etam. Atma ramak samabhyasat. Shonaku uvacha. Savai nivritti nirata. Sarvatro pekshako munihi. Kasya va brihatim etam. Atma ramak samabhyasat. Sutta uvacha. Wrong verse. Shonaka uvacha. Sri Shonaka asked. Saha. He. Vai. Of course. Nivritti. On the path of self-realization. Nirataha. Always engaged. Sarvatra. In every respect. Upekshakaha. Indifferent. Munihi. Sage. Kasya. For what reason? Va. Or. Brihatim. Vast. Etam. This. Atma Aramaha. One who is pleased in himself. Samabhyasat. Undergo the studies. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Sri Shonaka asked Sutta Goswami. Sri Shukadeva Goswami was already on the path of self-realization, and thus he was pleased with his own self. So why did he take the trouble to undergo the study of such a vast literature? Purport. Okay. Outside, okay. Okay. Bengali also. Okay. Purport. For the people in general, the highest perfection of life is to cease from material activities and be fixed on the path of self-realization. Those who take pleasure in sense enjoyment, or those who are fixed in material bodily welfare work, are called karmis. Out of thousands and millions of such karmis, one may become an Atmarama by self-realization. Atma means self, and Arama means to take pleasure. Everyone is searching after this highest pleasure, but the standard of pleasure of one may be different from the standard of another. Therefore, the standard of pleasure enjoyed by the karmis is different from that of the Atmaramas. The Atmaramas are completely indifferent to material enjoyment in every respect. Srila Shukadeva Goswami had already attained that stage, and still he was attracted to undergo the trouble of studying the great Bhagavatam literature. This means that Srimad Bhagavatam is a postgraduate study even for the Atmaramas, who have surpassed all the studies of Vedic knowledge. This is, of course, the question that is going to be answered with a very famous verse, Atmaramas Chumunayo, Nirgranta Hiyap Arukrame, Kurvantya Hoitukim Bhaktim, Ittam Bhutagano Harihi. Even the Atmaramas, the self-satisfied sages, who have no interest in anything material, Nirgranta, they have no knots of attachment. They're not attached to sense gratification, not attached to family, not attached to country, to anything in the material world. Still, api, urukrame, kurvanti ahoitu kim bhaktim. They are attracted to begin the devotional service of Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who performs wonderful, great acts, Urukrama. Krama, Urukrama is the name of Lord Vamanadev because he made very big steps. He covered the whole universe in two steps. So he is Urukrama. But Krishna in general, Krama also means any activity. So the activities of the Supreme Lord, all of his pastimes, are amazing. So therefore he's always, whether he's Vamanadev or any form of God, he's called Urukrama. Ittam, why? Why do these Atmarama sages, even though they're indifferent to everything in this world, show interest in serving Krishna? Ittam bhuta guno harihi. Whatever the reason is, this is proof that Krishna's qualities are so attractive, they attract even those who are not interested in anything else. If a materialist becomes attracted to Krishna's service, you may analyze psychologically, oh, he was in anxiety. He was suffering in his material life, and therefore he's finding some peace of mind, some escape in his Krishna consciousness. Or someone who is economically deprived, he's getting, you know, his breakfast and lunch free, living in the ashram. He's securing a comfortable life. Whatever. Or if someone is simply idle and curious, he finds something interesting in Krishna consciousness. It's something novel. You can analyze the material reasons why people are attracted. Krishna even discusses this in the Gita. Chaturvida bhajante imam jana sukritinor arjuna Arto gigaso artar ti gyanija paradarshaba. There are four kinds of people who approach me. People with material motives. And they have material reasons to approach Krishna. Arto, the person is distressed. Gigasur, he's just curious. Artar ti, he wants economic security. He wants money and facilities. And he approaches Krishna for that. Or Gyani, or he's a scholar of transcendental knowledge. And he's realized from studying the Upanishads and other literatures that the living entity is the servant of the Supreme Personality, and therefore he should surrender and serve him. So out of knowledge someone may approach. But these are considered neophytes, Kanishta Bhaktas, beginners. The lowest stage of devotional service is to approach Krishna with material motives. And those are the four motives that Krishna identifies. The Atmaramas, so the examples are given in the commentaries on the Bhagavatam of devotees in distress, devotees who wanted money, devotees who were curious, and devotees who were wise. So example is given of the four Kumaras. They were wise. They were Atmaramas, already Brahman realized, already self-realized, at least in the impersonal way. And when they, in their wanderings, they also decided to visit Vaikuntha out of curiosity. And when they came there, and there was some exchange, some confrontation with the chokidars, the gatekeepers of Vaikuntha, and they cursed Jayan Vijay. So Lord Narayan, noticing that that had happened, considered that his servants had committed aparad. If the servants commit aparad, then the master is responsible. It's his aparad. So he came to apologize to the four sages, the Kumaras, Sanat Kumara and his young brothers. When Narayan appeared on the scene, and he didn't come on an airplane or on the back of Garuda, he came walking on his 2 feet, accompanied by the goddess of fortune, out of respect for the sages. Not on a vehicle, but walking. And the sages had the opportunity to smell the tulsi patta on the feet of Lord Narayan. And that fragrance entering the nostrils agitated their minds, and their lives became transformed. They became shaken from their self-satisfied equilibrium of Brahman realization and became helplessly attracted to Krishna, to Lord Narayan. And they became bhaktas. So they're the example of neophyte devotees on the position of jnani, jnani cha. And tesham jnani niti yukta eka bhakto vishishyate. Among these four kinds of neophyte devotees, the jnanis are the best. Because if you begin your devotional service on a foundation of very strong knowledge, then you will be a solid devotee who could not be swayed from the path. A person who is attracted sentimentally, who wants to serve Krishna and engage in Krishna conscious activities because it's enjoyable, because it feels good, may later encounter difficulty. Because in the material world, it's never always enjoyable. There's always obstacles and difficulties. Especially when you're making the attempt to escape the material world. Just like if you want to go to outer space, you'll have to escape the gravitational pull of the Earth. You'll have to, go in a vehicle that can accelerate to 13,000 miles a second, miles an hour, which is equal to the gravitational pull of the Earth. If you can go that fast, you can escape the gravitational field of the Earth. 13,000 miles a second?
No.
Okay. Anyway, you have to make a great endeavor to escape the gravitational field. To escape the gravitational pull of Maya takes even more force, more acceleration. So if you don't have solid knowledge and you begin devotional service just out of sentiment, when the difficulties inevitably come, on those days when there's trouble, where there's frustration, you may just decide to give up. It doesn't feel good anymore, therefore I quit. But again, he won't be like that. He knows why. It's absolutely essential. I must execute this Krishna consciousness, whether it feels good all the time or not. So a jnani is the stronger devotee. Unfortunately, many jnanis are impersonalists. They're not interested in Krishna. They think the Mayavadis, why do we call them Mayavadis? It's an insulting term, Mayavadi. They don't call themselves Mayavadis. The term they use is Advaitavad. They're proponents of the theory of the philosophy of monism. Everything is one. Eka eva advaitiya brahma. So we are also Advaitavadis. We also propose that everything is one. Everything is the energy of Krishna. But everything is one and also different from Krishna. But the Advaitavad proposes that whatever has any form, whatever exhibits duality, whatever has a name, has a shape, must be illusion. It can't be the real thing. The absolute truth must have no form, no name, no shape, no qualities. So, the personality of Godhead is also Maya. He's also an illusion. The neophytes are encouraged to worship God in their temples, but the Atmaramas put that aside and ignore the deity, or they become the deity themselves. So we call them Mayavadis because they think that Krishna is also Maya. But, and because they're actually envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they have no hope. And anyone who listens to and becomes a follower of those Mayavadis, their hope for actual spiritual success is completely lost. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu warned, Mayavada Bhashya Shunile Hoi Sarvanash. If you listen to the explanation of the Vedas, of the Shastras, Vedanta, and so on, as given by the impersonalist, your life is ruined. Your spiritual life and everything else. So he condemns Mayavadi Aparati. The Mayavadis are offenders against Krishna because they deny that his personality is real. They call him an illusion. But there's another class of impersonalists. The four Kumaras, Sanat Kumara and his brothers, are not Mayavadis, they are Brahmavadis. Because they have no envy against the personality of Godhead. They have no interest in denying his personality. They just don't know. All they know is what they've learned about the impersonal Supreme. And they've specialized in that. That's like you go to the university, you specialize in some graduate course, you become an expert in some small segment of knowledge, and everything else you don't know much about. You know your specialty. So the Brahmavadis, their specialty is Brahman, the impersonal Supreme. They just don't know what the personality of God is. They're innocent. The Kumaras are such innocent Brahmavadis. When they meet the Supreme Person in some form or another, they become attracted. Atmaramas Chamuna. Even the Atmarama Munis, if they're not envious, cannot help but be attracted to Krishna when he shows his personal qualities. So the other example, after the four Kumaras, the next example is Shukadeva, the son of Vyas. He didn't want to even take birth, not out of fear so much. He was immune to the attractions of Maya. Someone who's afraid of Maya, he's not Atmarama. He's feeling repulsion. You know, someone who hates the material world, he's a misanthrope. He's not an Atmarama. He's a miserable person, wretched. He hates everybody and everything. Or he has some particular people he hates. He hates the Muslims. He hates the Jews. He hates the women. Whatever he hates. That's not Atmarama. An Atmarama is upekshakaha. Indifferent means he doesn't care. He's not attracted, he's not repelled. Just not interested. That's a standard of being self-satisfied. So that is the position, the original position of Shukadeva before he took his birth as the son of Vyas. He had, in his previous life, he had already achieved perfect equilibrium. He lost all interest in everything in the material world. And therefore, he did not want to take birth. Why do I want to take birth in this cesspool of the material world, this garbage dump? Why take birth here? Somehow I've entered this womb of Vyasadeva's wife, but I don't want to come out. What for? You know, I'm not interested. What am I going to come for? Baskin-Robbins ice cream? What? No reason to come. So he sat in the womb of his mother for 16 years and refused to come out. Only when Krishna came on the request of Vyasadeva, all the way to Vyasa's ashram at Badrinath, and personally requested Shukadev to come out of the womb and promised him, "Don't worry, I give you my promise. My material energy will never have any effect on you. Come out, please. Your father is an anxiety. Your mother is an anxiety." So Shukadev came out, but he refused to stay home. He's already 16 years old at birth. He's been sitting in the womb for 16 years. A Brahmin boy must take Upanayanam by the age of 11. Otherwise, he's fallen. Becomes Vratya. A Brahmin who does not, by the maximum age, take his Brahma Sutra initiation, Brahma Gayatri, it's too late after the age of 11 in the traditional system. Shukadev was already 16. Okay, some adjustment can be made. Now he's 16 years old. He has to take initiation. It's already too late, but some Vyasadev can make some adjustment. But Shukadev refused. Anapeta Krityam. He wouldn't even stay home long enough to get Upanayanam from his father. Immediately at birth, he just wandered off. And Vyasadev was chasing after him. Putreti tanmayataya tarabo binedus. Vyasadev was chasing after his son in the forest, trying to get him to stop. He was calling, "My son, my son." Tanmayataya tarabo binedu. No response. Shukadev would not even turn around to see who was calling him. Only the trees were echoing in response, "My son, my son." And Vyasadev could not get Shukadev to stop. That's what we read about in the beginning of the Bhagavatam. Shukadev was not interested, even to have the association of his great father Vyasadev. He left home immediately. So Vyasadev was perplexed. "It's destined that my son will study the Bhagavatam from me. He will become the authority of the Bhagavatam. He's supposed to speak the Bhagavatam to Parikshit Maharaj. And then the whole world will receive this knowledge." Of course, the Bhagavatam could be made available otherwise. Some other person could be chosen to be the speaker of Bhagavatam. But the Bhagavatam spoken by Shukadev is special. Shukamukad Amrita Drava Samyutam. Just like the mango, not quite ripe, may fall off the tree. I forget about falling off the tree. The mango is sitting in the tree. It's not quite ripe. If a parrot comes and pecks at it, to eat some of the juice, he leaves a hole in the mango. The oxidation can occur and the mango becomes ripe quickly. Shukamukad, it becomes soft and ripe when the parrot has punched a hole in it. Like that, the Bhagavatam, being touched by the lips of the transcendental parrot, Shukadev, becomes very soft and relishable. It's not hard to digest anymore. Much more attractive and full of rasa, of transcendental attractive taste. How is that? This is a mystery. Vyasadev spoke according to Jiva Goswami in the Tattva Sandarbha, he gives us his opinion that we can trust, that Vyasadev did not only speak some summary of the Bhagavatam, or some portions of it, edited, abridged version. He spoke the entire 18,000 verses to Shukadev. And Shukadev spoke the same exact 18,000 verses to Parikshit. That means that Shukadev didn't change one word from what he heard from his father to what he spoke to Parikshit. So what did he add? If you repeat something and don't change one word, is that also a translation? I can see if I change the language, or if I paraphrase in my own language, it's a translation, an interpretation. I've added something, I've changed something, I put my own, it's filtered through my own intelligence. But here's the mystery. He didn't change one word, and still it's the opinion of Sutta Goswami that having touched his lips, it's all the more full of meaning and all the more relishable. This is explained even by modern philosophers of language, or those who present the philosophy called hermeneutics. Hermeneutics is a study of interpreting scripture. This philosophy was initiated by Christian biblical scholars. How to understand the meaning of the scriptural text. So they present a theory of what they call translation. How a speaker is presenting an ancient text and then speaking it in his own words. And because the original text was spoken by someone in a foreign place many thousands of years ago, when you speak it to a different audience in a different time, the meaning becomes transformed. It's filtered through the intelligence of the person who's speaking it again. Certainly, if you're translating it into a different language, you cannot make a transparent translation. There's no such thing. It's impossible. When you translate something from another language, and you do it in your own words, through your own intelligence, you're adding something, or maybe subtracting something. It's never an exact copy. Even if you're speaking something was written 500 years ago, suppose you get some Kannada literature that was written 600 years ago, and you have to explain it to a modern audience. The language has changed in 600 years. You have to put it in your own words, paraphrase it, even though it's supposedly, theoretically, the same language. And then the theory says, even if you repeat the same words in the same language and don't change one word, still you're translating. That's the power of scripture, of revealed scripture. The person is speaking it, he doesn't have to repeat, even change one word. His own consciousness is added to the original. It's filtered through his intelligence. So Shukadev, simply by speaking the original Bhagavatam, without changing one shloka, one syllable, has added so much meaning and so much enjoyment, potential of transcendental enjoyment to the hearing of Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam spoken by Shukadev is a much more powerful book than the Bhagavatam spoken by before it was spoken by him. It is especially empowered to enlighten the fallen conditioned souls in Kali Yuga. The Bhagavatam is spoken by Vyas to Shukadev and then by Shukadev to Parikshit. Krishne Swadhamo Pagate Dharma Gyanadi Bhiksaha Kalao Nashta Drisham Esha Puranarko Duno Ditaha. Now that Krishna has departed from this world, this is being spoken 5,000 years ago, just a few years after Krishna's departure. Shonaka Rishi is asking, Krishna is gone. When he left, he took knowledge and renunciation away with him. What will or who will protect the principles of Dharma in the absence of Krishna, in the absence of Jnana, in the absence of Vairagya? So the answer that Sutta Goswami gives, now that Krishna has departed, and Jnana and Vairagya have departed with him, this Purana, Bhagavatam, has arisen just like the sun, and it will dispel the darkness of Kali Yuga for the unfortunate conditioned souls of this age. Especially after it's spoken by Shukadev to Parikshit. Shukadev was perfectly self-realized. He had no interest in anything material. But he became attracted to study this vast, difficult literature. So what happened was Vyasadeva saw that he himself could not attract Shukadev to come home. You know, he's Vyasadeva, everyone respects him and worships him, but his own son won't listen to him. Now, there's a saying, nobody's a saint in his own home, in his own hometown. You know, so Shukadev wouldn't listen to his father, very common thing. You know, the father may be so influential, everybody in the world listens to him, but the son won't listen. So he decided, this is described in the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, not that I've seen it, but Jiva Goswami tells this, repeats this story in his Tattva Sandarbha, that Vyasadeva made the idea, let me send a few of my disciples. ahead on the road. Let them run ahead on the road and hide in the bushes. So not that they're going to ambush Shukadev and try to catch him by force, but he told them, you just sit in the bushes ahead on the road, and when Shukadev walks by, recite a few verses from the Bhagavatam. So what I have read is that those verses were a few verses describing the killing of Putana witch, and a few other verses describing how Krishna stole the clothing of the gopis. So Shukadev heard these shlokas, and that made him stop. And that made him decide to come home and take the trouble to study Srimad Bhagavatam from his the same father who he refused to listen to. When it came to studying Bhagavatam, he was willing to come home. And he did that. He came back home and heard the entire 18,000 shlokas from his father. The Bhagavatam is not an easy book to study. Even very competent pundits are afraid of it. I don't remember the Sanskrit. There's one shloka that says your panditiyam is tested. The strength of your scholarship is tested by how you can understand and explain Srimad Bhagavatam. Other Puranas are easy compared to the Bhagavatam. The poetry, the language, the depth of ideas, it's very difficult. Not an easy book. We're very fortunate that Srila Prabhupada has translated it for us and given us his Bhaktivedanta purports. Otherwise, we have a hard enough time reading the book as it is, even with Prabhupada's explanation. We all have it on our shelves at home, but how often do we pick it up? Now, some devotees read it every day, but often we just keep it on the shelf. It's not an easy book. We don't, you know, we want to read it, but it's just, you know, I'm too busy, I'm too tired, I don't have time. It's not easy. It wasn't, and certainly for Shukadeva Goswami, who didn't bother to pick up any books. He didn't take initiation. If you don't take Upanayanam, you cannot study the Vedas. That is the purpose of Upanayanam, of getting this Brahma Sutra. Okay? Because you cannot begin your Vedic study until you take that initiation from your father or from the Kula Guru, somebody. Shukadev didn't take initiation, so he never studied the Vedas. He never recited the mantras. Never went to the Gurukul. He didn't have the habit of reading books. Just a botheration. Why bother? He already knew everything. But to study this book, which is a particularly difficult book, he was attracted. So even though it's a difficult book, it has the potency to completely transform our lives. What it teaches us is the science of Krishna consciousness. Don't. It teaches us who is God, who the devotees of God are, and what is the devotional service that is shared between God and his devotees. So there are many avatars of Krishna described in the Bhagavatam. Over 30, 35 or so, different avatars whose leelas are described. And Krishna himself is described in the entire 10th canto. Krishna is speaking the Uddhava Gita in a good part of the 11th canto. Krishna is also present in this first canto in many of the chapters. So the 10th canto, out of 18,000 verses, the 10th canto contains 4,900 and some verses. A good chunk of the Bhagavatam is the 10th canto. All Krishna Leela. So various avatars and then Krishna himself are described in great detail. And then there are many Vaishnavas, devotees of Krishna, members of his dynasties, sun dynasty, moon dynasty, and other devotees are described in the Bhagavatam. In total, there are 3,200 different people either mentioned or described in Srimad Bhagavatam. And most of those are devotees of Krishna. So from the Bhagavatam, we learn the science of devotional service. The purpose of studying the Bhagavatam is not to cram our heads with information. To enter Goloka, there is no examination, not a written test you have to take and spit out all the information that you've crammed. So you can keep notes if you want during class, but that's not the point, to memorize all the facts. The purpose of studying Srimad Bhagavatam should be simply to become attracted to Krishna. That's what we'll be tested on. When we come to the gateway of Vaikuntha, we're going to be tested. Are you actually attracted to Krishna? Or do you have some attraction back down there in the material world? And then it will be judged whether we can enter or not. So Sukadeva Goswami is attracted. We'll read about that in the next verse. That even though he's an impersonal sage and has no attraction to anything else in this world, he was attracted to Srimad Bhagavatam. And Srimad Bhagavatam is none different from Krishna. It is the incarnation of Krishna in the form of sound. And this sound incarnation, Srimad Bhagavatam, which is Krishna Katha, spoken about Krishna, Srimad Bhagavad Gita, which is Krishna Katha spoken by Krishna, two different types of Krishna Katha. That spoken by Krishna, and the other kind spoken about Krishna. And then we have the incarnation of the Lord in sound as his holy name, Nama Prabhu, the name of Krishna, especially in Kali Yuga, is a special incarnation of the Lord. These three, although they exist eternally, in all ages, the Bhagavatam, the Gita, and Krishna's names are available. But they have special power in the Kali Yuga. In that age where everything else is inaccessible. Krishnadas Kaviraj says, paraphrasing the instruction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj says, "E Kali Kali, Nahi Kom Dharma, Vaishnava Vaishnava Shastra E Kohi Marmo." In this Kali Yuga, there is no Dharma. All the otherwise previously available facilities for practicing religious life are not functioning properly in Kali Yuga. No one can perform yajna properly. To perform a proper Vedic yajna, you need expensive paraphernalia. At least you need pure ghee. So unless you have your own cow and you make the ghee yourself, how do you know what you're buying in the bottle is ghee? It's ghee, mostly buffalo ghee. And who knows what else they put in it. So how are you going to perform a yajna? You don't even have pure ghee. You don't have Brahmins who can chant properly. You don't have the other necessary paraphernalia. You want to perform soma sacrifice? The soma plant is not available on the earth planet anymore. Once in a while, the Nambudaris and others still perform some soma sacrifice. They have to use a substitute plant because the original soma is extinct. So proper yajna cannot be performed. Proper ashtanga yoga cannot be performed. Nothing works in Kali Yuga. There isn't any religion left. The leaders of religion are mostly hypocrites. So you don't even have proper Brahmins to give you guidance in Kali Yuga. What to do? Vaishnava, Vaishnava, Shastra, E Kohe Marma. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu points out, the one thing that is left, marma, that is of essence, that goes to the heart, that can actually solve your problems and set you on the proper path of dharma, is simply two things that remain in Kali Yuga that are still pure and intact. The association of Vaishnavas and the Vaishnava Shastra, meaning particularly Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. By associating with devotees, what is it? Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavatyutama shloke bhakti bhavati naistiki. By daily, every day, regularly, giving service to the Bhagavat. Bhagavat has two meanings, the book Bhagavat and the person Bhagavat. By serving the Vaishnavas, and by reading and studying and speaking Srimad Bhagavatam, one can develop attraction to Krishna, even in Kali Yuga. Kalor dosha nidhe rajan asti hyeko mahan gunaha kirtanad eva krishnasya mukta sambhak param vrajit. This age is an ocean of faults. Dosha nidhe. There's nothing good about the age. But there is one good thing, one great quality that makes Kali Yuga desirable, is that simply by glorifying Krishna through his name, through the sound vibration of the Bhagavatam and the Gita, one can become free of all attachments and attain the supreme perfection of life, which is becoming attracted to Krishna and developing love for him. Jai Shri Jagannath. Okay, so I'll stop with that. So at this point, does anybody have any comments or questions? Yes, sir. Okay. So, you know, I repeating, not my idea, it's Jiva Goswami's idea, that what Vyasadeva spoke to Shukadeva was the entire Bhagavatam, 18,000 verses. But you're making the point, and Jiva Goswami addresses this question. There are verses that are spoken by Shukadeva in the Bhagavatam. There are verses that were spoken by Suta Goswami and the sages in Naimisharanya. These things hadn't been spoken yet. They were in the future. How did Vyasadeva speak them all before the fact? To Shukadeva, he did. Vyasadeva is Trikalagya. The Bhagavatam exists eternally. The statements made by Suta Goswami and by Shonaka were there in the book millions of years before anybody opened their mouth. This is Shruti. The Bhagavatam officially, as far as everybody is concerned, is Smriti. It's Purana. The original Shruti is eternal. The Upanishads, the Vedas, not one syllable ever changes. But the Smriti, like the Puranas, the Dharma Shastras, they are spoken in particular ages by particular sages who speak in their own words. So the words of the Puranas and of the Dharma Shastras can change in different ages. But the words of the Shruti is never supposed to change. Officially, Bhagavatam is one of the 18 Puranas. But Jiva Goswami lets us in on the secret that the Bhagavatam is actually Shruti. That actually it's eternal scripture that never changes. And in the Shruti, in the Upanishads, we read about conversations like between Janaka Maharaj and Yajnavalkya Rishi discussing philosophical issues. Well, Janaka lived at a certain time in history, and so did Yajnavalkya, and their conversation was at a certain time and place. The scripture is supposed to be eternal. How can it record an historical spoken? And then when the historical people come on the scene, they read the script. Like that, the statements made by Shonaka Rishi and Suta Goswami, they were already written into the script before they were born. And when they appeared on the scene, they read the script. They repeated the same words that are recorded in the Bhagavatam. Maybe with some improvisation. That's the explanation. One explanation. The Bhagavatam is eternal. What Shukadev heard from his father is the whole thing, all 18,000 verses, all 12 cantos. Okay. Okay. There was a question in the back? Yes.
The same question.
Okay, same question's already answered. Anything else? Yes, Prabhu? That's an abbreviated form. Brahma spoke only for... Brahma heard from Garbhadakshay Vishnu the summary of the Bhagavatam in four shlokas. So the entire Bhagavatam exists eternally, but also there are summarized versions. There's four shlokas spoken to Brahma. Then Brahma spoke the Bhagavatam to his son Narada in three chapters that are recorded in the seventh chapter. Chapters 5, 6, and 7 are the three-chapter Bhagavatam spoken to Narada. Then Narada spoke to Vyas. We don't have that version in our Bhagavatam. What Vyasadeva spoke, what heard from Narada. Not the whole thing. And then Vyasadeva spoke the whole 18,000 verses. It doesn't mean that when Garbhadakshay Vishnu spoke only four verses to Brahma, that the 18,000 verses didn't exist. They did. In fact, according to, again, Jiva Goswami, after hearing the four verses, Brahma took initiation in the, I don't know which mantra, Vishnu mantra, from Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and then he studied all 18,000 verses. So Brahma also heard the whole 18,000 verses from Lord Vishnu. Okay? Thank you. Yes, Mother? Yes. Yes, but there's devotional service in different styles. Shuddha bhakti, perfectly pure devotional service without any mixture of jnana, don't fool them, and karma is found only in the Bhagavatam. Even the Vishnu Purana is a little bit mixed with karma mishra bhakti. Vishnu Purana is not considered a pure bhakti shastra, the same way that Bhagavatam is. According to Srila Sanatana Goswami, he gives a list of what he considers the bhakti shastra. Actually, he does include the Vishnu Purana as bhakti shastra. Vishnu Purana is just a little bit below the standard of the Bhagavatam, as far as the purity of it. It appeals a little bit to those who are also attracted to karma, the Vishnu Purana, just a little. So it's considered bhakti shastra. And that list that Sanatana Goswami gives of the bhakti shastras is quite short. He mentions the Bhagavatam and the Vishnu Purana, and then he says parts, but not the whole, of the Padma Purana. Parts of the Skanda Purana is considered pure bhakti shastra. The Harivamsa is on the list. And then a few Upanishads, Gopal Tapani Upanishad, basically, and maybe one or two others. And that's basically the list. They're the only books that count as pure bhakti shastras. And even the other sattvic puranas, the bhakti that is presented in them is karma mishra and jnana mishra bhakti, mixed with the motives of becoming successful in this world or of getting liberation. But Bhagavatam rejects everything that's at all deviates from the principle of pure bhakti. Dharma Klojita Kaito Votra. All forms of cheating religion are rejected in Srimad Bhagavatam. And Srila Sridhar Swami, he explains that cheating religion includes even the desire for liberation is a form of cheating religion from the absolute viewpoint of the Bhagavatam. Even wanting to gain liberation is a disqualification for entering into the study of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, for those who want liberation and also want to serve God, there are other books. Like Shvetashvatara Upanishad teaches Jnana Mishra Bhakti on a very high level. but it's for jnanis who also want to be devotees. Upanishadic texts like the Shvetashvatara Upanishad. Yasya deve pura bhaktir yata deve tata gurau. Tasya ite katita hyarta prakashante mahatmanaha. Last verse of the Shvetashvatara Upanishad. For someone who has complete faith in the Supreme Lord and equal faith in his own spiritual master, all the secret purports of this Upanishad will be revealed to him. Still, that's not Shuddha Bhakti. If you read the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, you see that it very much is slanted toward the motivation of gaining liberation. Even though it's teaching devotion, but it's not pure devotion. Okay? Yes, ma'am. Yes. Okay, the story, well, everyone didn't hear that. From a book published by T.T.D. Devastanams, so it must be based on the Sri Vaishnav Siddhanta. And I think it's authentic. I don't remember where it's from, but it must be from a bona fide Puranic text. That Lord Shiva was speaking the Bhagavatam to his wife Parvati. That's confirmed in the Skanda Purana, the Bhagavat Mahatmya, in the Vaishnav Kanda. Lord Shiva speaks the Bhagavatam to his wife. He takes a whole year to speak it. And then she speaks it to him. He takes a month, I'm sorry. And then she sometimes speaks it to him. Parvati speaks to him, and she takes 2 months to speak it. So that's confirmed, that Lord Shiva spoke to his wife. Then the story you related is that he had a parrot, and the parrot heard the Bhagavatam. And then he shouted at the parrot. The parrot ran away and took birth, entered the womb of Vyasadeva's wife. It sounds credible. I don't remember the exact story. It's coming from a reputable source. You know, I don't think they would be publishing. If it's a reputable Sri Vaishnav scholar, I don't think he'd be publishing some bogus story. So it must come from one of the Puranas. There's other stories that we don't accept. There, in the Devi Bhagavat Purana, the description of a second Shukadev, the Chaya, shadow Shukadev, another son of Vyasadeva, who became a Grihastha and had a daughter. So that's in no way the same Shukadev. Even if he did exist, he's not the same person. You know, the Grihastha Shukadev cannot be the speaker of the Bhagavatam. He's somebody else altogether. So devotees sometimes get confused reading that story. I've been asked questions about it. He's, you know, the speaker of the Bhagavatam, you know, is never a Grihastha. Okay. Is there anything else? Okay, thank you, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai, Hare Krishna.